Hi everyone, my name is Emily Newstrom and I'm here to talk to you today about a unique case of extracranial giant cell arteritis with normal inflammatory markers. For a little background, giant cell arteritis or GCA is a type of vasculitis or chronic inflammation of blood vessels. There are three subtypes: cranial, cranial with extracranial involvement, or solitary extracranial, depending on the affected arteries, either smaller vessels above the neck or larger vessels like the aorta. Typical symptoms involve new onset headache, jaw pain, or visual changes, but symptoms like fever, fatigue, or weight loss can also occur, especially in those with extracranial involvement. However, diagnostic criteria is only based on the typical presentation. Overall treatment is with high-dose steroids. Our case was a 69-year-old male with mitral regurgitation that had been having shortness of breath for about a week but had no other symptoms. Other than his severe mitral regurgitation, his physical exam and labs were pretty unremarkable as well, but a chest CT revealed a 4.9 centimeter dilation in the aorta. So at the time of his mitral valve repair, a 5.5 centimeter, larger than the 4.9 centimeter on imaging, thoracic aortic aneurysm was found and repaired as well. Then the surgical biopsy of the area came back with presence of the characteristic giant cells that define GCA. So the patient was also started on IV steroids. In this graphic, I wanted to highlight the commonly involved areas for aortic involvement. Our patient's aneurysm, which is a dangerous complication of this disease, occurred in the ascending aorta, which overall is a common location. However, data on this subject is pretty sparse. A few pooled studies and case reports note the thoracic region being the most commonly involved, but you can see incidence ranges are pretty wide. For example, subclavian artery involvement is seen anywhere from 26% to 100% of patients, which isn't very informative. Therefore, I wanted to discuss the diagnostic strategy for this less typical phenotype. Even though extracranial vessel involvement occurs in up to 80% of GCA patients, there are not separate GCA guidelines for extracranial versus purely cranial, and most cases are found incidentally, as with our patient, delaying diagnosis. The inaccurate CTA estimation of our patient's aneurysm size also makes it clear that alternative imaging studies may be necessary. Again, the literature in this area is lacking, but I could find some studies that focus on extracranial GCA-specific imaging in order to compare. Ultrasound is low cost with no radiation exposure, but is highly operator dependent. Sensitivity and specificity is estimated at 77 and 96%. PET scans potentially have a better correlation with inflammatory activity versus simple morphology, which could be ideal for monitoring. Its pooled sensitivity and specificity is 66 to 77% and 66 to 100%. Those same studies also assess CTA sensitivity and specificity, which was 73 and 78%. And while MRI is promising, given its better detection of early disease and generally similar sensitivity to PET, it is costly and specific extracranial GCA sensitivity and specificity data has not been assessed. So the big takeaways from this case are that 1, extracranial GCA is an underdiagnosed condition which may require separate ACR criteria. And 2, there is a clinical need to explore alternative imaging strategies for extracranial GCA diagnosis and disease monitoring. Thank you.